conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndyScrolls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine.
I don't need to wear glasses to see through your bullshit.
If money is the root of all evil, then I'm the tallest tree in the forest.
You guys! It's episode 172-ish. Jesus.
Wow.
Fucking Christ. I know. Just a couple in. And guys, I'm so excited to have a new guest on the People's Couch. He is an actor, writer, producer, podcaster, whose credits include some of my favorite all-time shows, including Billy on the Street, the other two. Shrill, big mouth, quibbies, singled out, and of course the podcast Urgent Care. And P.S., this is someone who is now a close personal friend of Kenya Moore. So I am so excited to life twirl on, I guess, with none other than Joel Kim Booster. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I'm holding up okay. You know, nothing is ideal, but, you know, things could be worse.
Things could be worse, but I have to tell you, I don't think it can get any better than talking about all things Real Housewives with you.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it elsewhere, but Bravo has really been a lifeline to me during these times.
Yes.
Like, I've started watching shows that I never thought I would watch. Like, I've always been a Housewives fan, never thought I could get into Below Deck or a $1 Million Listing, even. All of the all of the Bravo shows that are currently airing, I am watching week to week, because something about watching a show week to week live as it's airing with commercials, even, is like weirdly comforting. It makes me feel less alone. So here I am,
completely
getting into Below Deck Med for the first time.
I have to tell you, I put Below Deck on pause the last season of OG, so I haven't seen the most recent season of OG, and I haven't seen the season of Med, but it is one of those shows that when it's firing on all cylinders, I mean, it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
It's very escapist, but it's like laden with drama because everyone's trash.
Weirdly, it's the one that makes me a little bit the most depressed out of all of the ones to watch, because it just makes me want to go on vacation so bad. Mm. That's like the whole show is like based on people going on vacation, and that's, I just want to take a trip so badly. Mm. I want to go on a trip, and I want to treat the staff of a sailing boat way better than any of the people that have ever appeared on Below Deck.
Wow. If you could go on Below Deck or Below Deck Med and bring three Housewives or Bravo celebrities with you, who would you bring? And you're talking about enjoying a vacation.
Yeah.
So, like, who do you want to have fun with, kiki with?
I think I would bring... you know what? I'm gonna, in terms of like who I think would be the best to go on vacation with right now, Leah. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna bring Robin. I'm gonna bring, and then just to sort of round it out because of the franchises that are currently airing, I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna bring Dorit too. I'm gonna bring her. We'll hardly ever see her. She'll be in glam the whole time. But I'm sorry. Out the gate, I'm going to say, I think Dorit's looks are often worth waiting for. So,
wow. Do you think Dorit is a more of a like natural glam person than Erica Jayne? Do you think her glam is more?
No, I don't think it's more natural. I will say I do think of late, Dorit is doing Erica better than Erica is doing Erica. She's bringing like an elevated sort of like outrageous, like stupid, like that look. I'm sorry. The look that when they were in Italy and they were waiting for her a couple weeks ago with the big hair, when her and Erica again looked very similar, it was a better version of Erica's look. It really was. And so I don't know. I was into it. I mean, she's all labels. She's just like, I don't know. She is a gay man's like just conjuring of a woman, you know? Like she's there is no like there except for just like the clothes and the aesthetic, and we can get into how I feel about my journey with Dorit when we talk about BH, but yeah, those are the three that I would take, because I think that they would be the most chill vacation vibes. I think you get a little bit of different vibes from all three of those ladies, but I think that they'd be the easiest to be on a boat with.
Who, which captain would you prefer? Lee, Sandy, or the one nobody cares
You know
about?
What? I'm not familiar with the other ones. I've only watched Below Deck Med, so it's going to be Captain Sandy for me. And I think likely for me, it would be Captain Sandy no matter what, because I love a powerful lesbian behind the wheel, you know?
I totally hear you. Captain Lee is a little bit of like a Grandpa America, where people love them because they love him because they could see him on like Christmas,
doling out
gifts and like, you know, having dry jokes at Thanksgiving or whatever. Mm-hmm. He just has that kind of like warm but also standoffish vibe, and was probably the number one most popular Bravo celebrity at BravoCon.
Wow.
Like, hands down, people were free. He was the
really?
Beetle. He was the below deck Beetle. Yeah, it was. He just elicits this kind of like tween mania out of all of us when we see him. I think because it's not that he's a cartoon. He's a true, genuine person. He's just so authentically himself that I really, and I've
and
met
that's
him
not
IRL.
Something that you get
he's
from a lot of
guy.
Bravo celebrities.
Oh, not, oh. We might get there when we talk about certain franchises that are on TV right now. Yeah, he has that kind of special gift of being a guy who would be exactly himself now, regardless of whether or not he was taking home a Bravo check, which I think is pretty great. So, Joel Kim Booster, you were in one of two chairs, VIP style, at none other than Watch What Happens Live in November. I watched it.
Wow.
I fell in love with you. Of course, I'd known your work prior, but I just feel like you brought something to Watch What Happens, which is somewhat of a rarity, which is someone who, you know, top of your game professionally, but you are also a devout Bravo-holic, and not a Bravo-holic in the sense of like, I love New York and also Pump Rules, where some of these celebrities, you know, say that they watch a franchise, so that makes them like God's gift. You truly understand the minutiae, which, you know, there was a moment where you're doing like a rapid fire segment. And I think you yourself even said, like, I know this is supposed to be rapid fire, but there are things that need to be said. And it was so like, I know every Bravo-holic, every Bravo viewer at home was like reaching to the TV screen, aka computer, aka iPad, and thinking, he's one of us. Like, you're in the chair. You're not bartending.
It felt very, felt very Make-A-Wish. Like, because it, like, my appearance on Watch What Happens really is like proof positive that a good publicist can really make dreams come true for any normal person. Because there was like, I was like promoting my show on NBC, but it was just so strange to be there and be there for the premiere of Atlanta. Like, that's a primetime slot. Like, it actually made sense because I think that they paired me with Kenya because they're not going to bring on like a real celebrity to try and pull away from Kenya Moore on the premiere day of Atlanta. So I think they needed someone like me who was willing to sort of give up the camera time and sort of understood the assignment of I'm there to kiss Kenya's ass and be like a Bravo super fan and also like a little bit promote something, like have an excuse to be there. But it really did feel so like strange when they told me I was going to be on with Kenya. I was like, wow, I really thought I was going to get like one of the Married to Medicine ladies, but here I am.
who are amazing. That's a show you need to watch. Kenya Moore.
I do watch.
Kenya Moore's A-list. She's part of one of the most powerful, successful.
It is shady of me to say, but let's be clear.
No, I understand.
The Married to Medicine ladies are B-list. They're JV.
There's a small difference between Dr. Heavenly and Kenya Moore hair care. You know what I'm saying? Like, one does teeth and one like literally owns BravoTV.com.
Exactly.
So what was it like? Were you out of body the whole time?
I was a little bit out of body the whole time. I mean, it was so bizarre, and I was so frightened because I actually like Kenya a lot more than I think some people do. But I was still afraid, and I went in being like, well, I'm just gonna kiss her ass and I'm gonna agree with everything she says. And that strategy, and I think that's the strategy I would have had for any of the housewives, quite honestly.
No, super smart. Incredibly smart.
Because I just, you know, I wanted it to be a pleasant experience, and she was a delight. I'm gonna say it. She was a delight. Everyone on the, you know, who was working Watch What Happens, she was a delight too. I think she knows who keeps the lights on at Kenya at Moore Manor, so she, you know, she was on her best behavior with the Bravo people. And I don't know, she had no idea who I was or why I was there, but once she caught wind of like I was a comedian and I was there doing comedy, she really did like, so she was very warm. Much warmer than I think she had to be, considering she could smell how much I adored her and like the franchise that she was on. But she, at one point, they played some clip or something like that to demonstrate, sort of prove that I'm a comedian. And she, during the commercial break,
prove that you're a comedian.
Yeah. She leaned over and she was like, I love sketch comedy. I love sketch comedy. We should collaborate on something. And she followed me on Twitter, has since unfollowed. Yeah. And that's fair. And that's fair. Oh. My Twitter presence is a little caustic, a little gross sometimes. So I don't begrudge her following and then unfollowing. I think she maybe thought that there would be more, you know, sketch comedy opportunities via our relationship. And there didn't, you know, there wasn't any. So she unfollowed.
Do you know at what point? She unfollowed?
Didn't notice. I remember like going to her page and not seeing the follows you
no
back. But Kenya, I still follow her. Oh.
So. Wow. I mean, listen, I think the importance of Kenya is that people need to understand, regardless of how you feel about her, and I happen to actually love Kenya, she is so crucial and integral to Atlanta right now. Yep. And it's important for people to know that you don't need to love the choices that someone is making to love and appreciate their star power on the show. Mm-hmm. And as one star fades away, Lanithia leaks, another rises. Yeah. And I think Kenya's return was at the exact right time.
And here's the crucial difference, I think, between Kenya and Nini. They're both sort of agents of chaos in a big way on the show. But the problem with Nini is that she got so big that she didn't think she needed to be friends with any of the other ladies anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. Like, Kenya, for all her faults, and she makes a lot of enemies, she still does she pulls herself back when she is about to lose, like, a Cynthia. Or, yes, you know, she maintains the relationships with, like, Candy and things like that enough so that, like, she's still in it, even though at any given point in time, most of the cast members are mad at her. But, like, she has enough people in her corner so that she still feels of the show. Like, at a certain point, like, Nini, you need more than Marlo. You need more than a friend of
who's
on the
not
show.
Even on the
yeah.
show.
You need somebody who's holding a peach in your corner. And you can't just leave. Say what you will about Kenya, but she would never leave a reunion and like sort of fold her laptop down in the way that Kenya
even
did.
Even when physically assaulted, mm-hmm. Kenya Moore will take a moment, collect herself, demand the firing
exactly.
of said assaulter, and then twirl right back mm-hmm. on that couch and pick it up right where she, you know, things left off. And, you know, that reminds me of a point that you made on Watch What Happens, which was, at that point, Kenya and Portia were BFFs again. And it was so wonderful to see both of these women on journeys as brand new moms in relationships that were going through
tumult.
Incredibly rocky yeah, patches, and also women who seemed to be coming into their own. And so it was difficult for me to watch the last part of Atlanta when, for whatever reason, Portia really decided to jump passionately back on Team Nini, which to me is a train that's already left the station. And I wonder what that will look like next season if, in fact, Nini either doesn't return or returns just to film a swan song and then depart.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen? What do you want to happen?
The thing is that I think that Nini sort of is in a difficult position that a lot of housewives... A friend of mine, Pat Regan, a scholar of
Seek treatment.
Of, yes.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Phenomenal.
Said something very smart, I think, of a lot of these ladies, which is that we promote them until they're no longer qualified for the job that they have, for the position that they have. And that's what sort of happened, you could argue, with Bethany. You know, like she mm-hmm. was never meant for a talk show, but yet we kept promoting her to the point where that seemed like the logical next step for her.
Our bad.
And that's our fault. Yeah, it is. It's our
it's
fault.
Our fault. It's
and
our
I
fault.
Think the same thing has happened with Nini, but I don't think that Nini has the humility that Bethany had to come back and really play ball in the way that she needs to. She still thinks that she's better than this show and she thinks she's in control. And I think I think that she thinks she could probably get away with leaving without a swan song. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if she gives it a couple of seasons break before she like comes back and gives us really the last moment. But I don't know. And the thing is like, I don't know how much patience Andy will have for it. Keep going, like moving forward.
I mean, she's come out kind of strong against him in the most passive aggressive way possible of like, I know someone who happens to run a network who's a piece of shit. Yeah. I'm going to bury you. Have you met Lisa Bloom? Which she somehow used that as some sort of way to show her like business acumen, which, sweetie, like Google Lisa Bloom, read The New Yorker once a year and you'll understand that this woman is not exactly the person you want on in charge of your business interests in any way, or even to have your phone number, frankly. But have you been following Nini's tweets? I mean, do you think that she's okay? All right, well, you're missing out.
Oh, maybe I should go. I mean, I have the bandwidth for like one crazy Atlanta housewife on my feeds, and that's Kenya. And so maybe I should expand. Maybe I should broaden my horizons a little bit. But
Atlanta's social is so interesting. You have Portia, who's featured completely rightly in the New York Times as the future first housewife or Bravolette to ever receive a Nobel Peace Prize.
I mean,
which is going to be
talk about growth. I mean,
talk about growth.
To go from thinking the Underground Railroad is an actual railroad to being arrested in, you know, to protesting Breonna Taylor, like it is like her murder. It's crazy. Like you never thought she would get there, and I'm so proud of her. And like, I don't know, I love her. She's an all timer.
She's stepping into her family legacy. I mean, when we talk about favorite housewives, you know, I am a problematic fan in the sense that for several years I have stand for Shan, and it's not something I'm proud of.
Wow.
I have had a lot of conversations with people where they've checked in on me and on my like soul, mental health, and even physical being, my spirit. It's been a rough several months, I have to say. I've been keeping six feet of distance from myself and my stand-in of Shan. But when I really think about like, who do you genuinely love? Who, when you think about, is just the light that burns brighter every day? It's no contest. It's Portia.
Yeah, and I have to go back and amend my answer of who I'm taking on the yacht, and it's got to be, I'm sorry, Dorit, the looks aren't strong enough. It's we're replacing Dorit with Portia. I can't believe it was really, and it's my, and I apologize to Dorit for even putting her in that position. I really do, because that's my fault. That's my fault for putting her. That's an oversight on my part, because I was just thinking about that, the shows that were on. But no, it's got to be Portia. I mean, Portia, Robin, and Leah, I think, would be the perfect vacation.
Maybe Dorit could chief stew. She speaks several
languages. That is true.
She knows a table setting.
In another life, that really is the life that Dorit should have had, in arguably.
I mean, she feels like the chief stew of Beverly Hills right now. She's just trying to
really
create
does.
Memories and moments on Italiano that are just, you know, transcend a normal trip anywhere else. So we're talking a little bit about Atlanta. You mentioned Dorit. So I feel like we need to talk about the conversation that everyone is having across this country. Whose side are you on, Joel Kim Booster?
I'm
are you
staunchly
Brandy Denise?
Team Denise.
Don't
Team Denise.
Okay. You really honestly scared me with the astonishingly, because my heart
The whole world is Team Denise. Yeah. The whole
world is Team Denise. Everyone is Team Denise except maybe Denise, who doesn't understand how to be like varsity Team Denise.
Yeah.
She's not doing a great job of showing that she's.
And that's
Team
really
Denise,
frustrating.
But
that's really frustrating for me to watch someone not know how to play the game well enough to. When you have all the trump cards on your side, you have the people on your side, you have a lot of. I think, like, if you're playing the game of Housewives, she has like all of the pieces and all of the positioning to really win this fight. And she's just not playing the game very well. And you really feel, give a fucking Pulitzer to the producer who convinced her to come back to that table.
Chris. I think it was Chris. I don't know.
Who knows?
Chris, Steve, Scott.
Whatever his name is, he deserves a medal. Because I can only imagine how frustrating. It's just so clear she doesn't know how to play this game. And I don't know if she ever will, but by God, I love her. And I am so mad at the other ladies, mainly Kyle and Teddy.
How have How have you felt about this season so far?
I mean, it's not
especially
great.
Coming off. Oh, you don't think it's great?
I don't think it's great.
Unpack that for me.
I think it's another case of they have enmeshed themselves in one storyline that is unfolding at a pace that is just not commensurate with what I want to see from these shows. Like, I need to diversify the stories a little bit and give something to some of. I need more. I need, like, Kyle and Dorit's tension to really bubble forth a little bit more. I need something from Teddy. Something from Teddy. Anything from Teddy, actually, other than what she's giving us, this pregnancy. I mean, the show forgets that Teddy's there half the time. So it is, for me, frustrating to have it all sort of coalesce around the Denise of it all, who, I don't think is equipped to be, like, Lisa, for all her faults, LVP, was equipped to have a pylon. You know, she's like, she knew how to sort of manage having all of the ladies against her in a way that felt like not always interesting to watch on TV, but at least it felt like it didn't feel like Denise has two moves, leave and lie. And it is and defense in a defensive stance. And so I want more from the season a little bit. I'm loving Garcelle. I'm loving how messy Garcelle is.
Oh my God. Garcelle.
It is so messy.
An unbelievable addition. And I know a lot of people have talked about, like, where's Garcelle? We don't see Garcelle enough. And I'm just so appreciative of the moments that she's there. And I feel like what she did this week on the episode needed to be said. It needed to be said. Someone needed to say, Lisa Rinna, you are not actually perfect. And a part of your problematic space on this show right now is that you are more than willing to drive storyline against people who you may or may not quote unquote love, which is a piece of shit, but you are shocked and horrified when the conversation turns to you.
And your behavior,
And your behavior. And I mean, what did you think about that kind of line of questioning that Garcelle directed?
I mean, I'll say this. I don't think it's unfair to bring up when you're in the public eye, like, these sorts of questions. Mm-hmm. I think it was a little mealy-mouthed of Garcelle to be like, I'm not judging you. I'm just asking a question, which it's like, okay, if you're going to go there, then go there, Garcelle, and, like, own that, to use the you know, the phrasing of one Lisa Rinna herself. Own it. Own it, Garcelle. Like, you are asking the question, and I think it's a question a lot of people ask, and I think it's, like, a totally fair one when you are sort of present, like, when you're including your daughter's storyline in this show, then, like, you have to own all sides of it and all, like, sort of, like, aspects of it and your behavior and, like, this part of it. You have to be able to answer for that. And, like, she didn't have a great answer for it. She didn't. And that's frustrating.
And she called out the asking of the question as completely inappropriate, but do we not remember Munchausen?
Yeah.
Lisa Rinna's own defense was, I'm not saying you have it. I'm just saying this is something people are talking about. Now, what's her face? Catherine Edwards, whatever her name was. And not that Kim Richards is the person you want to go to for info or truth, but Kim Richards has brought it up. A lot of housewives and cast members on the show have referenced in the past that there is something there with Lisa Rinna and the way that she has tried to divert attention away from that, especially this season. I mean, the camera always goes to her when she's ordering food and goes with what she's eating. She talks about eating four plates of food at Kyle's, you know, picnic barbecue that costs a bajillion dollars. She does these things to overcompensate, except nobody's asking, what are you overcompensating for?
Mm-hmm.
Then she uses her daughter's eating disorder as a part of her story. And shout out to Amelia Gray, who is talking openly and honestly and is such a young woman. She's what, like 19, 20, 21, something like that, who's talking so openly and bravely about this. Like, I have no choice but to, of course, I would fully support anybody speaking openly about their struggle. But I thought it was sort of unfair of Lisa to yet again use her daughter's storyline and vulnerability to replace her own. You can have that as it's her family. Yeah. She can talk about it, but that can't be the only way that she is showing vulnerability by describing someone else's. So when the conversation becomes, what is your role in this? You do a daily dance where you are, it's all about your body and your moves, and you are someone, you know, if we're going to talk about how Hollywood has added to the idea of women's bodies, you know, from size six and up as like the other, and you look at these women who are glamorized as like this being the thing when it comes to like the size of your physical self. And Lisa Rinna uses the size of her physical self often, which is entirely her choice. She has every right to. There are going to be questions about that when you're talking about your daughter's eating disorder and the fact that there have been questions on this very show that you are on discussing the fact that housewives have not seen her eat publicly. Like, I'm not saying it is a problem. I'm saying that the question has been asked, so it's not like Garcelle is the first one to ask it.
Yeah, and it's and like not a night earlier, not or was it that very same night? She was saying like, if you're gonna be here, be here, and and like answer the questions, you know, like you're we're talking about your life and this is a part of it. And like she imagine if Garcelle had turned that same sort of tone back on her of like, be here, answer the question, like this is your life. Like, I don't know. It's frustrating to watch, but I hope, you know, I don't know. I hope that Amelia's okay. And I hope that like, it seems from her responses on social media, she is. Mm-hmm. And like, I think she's, you know, she's towing a good line of defending her mom, but also sort of, you know, advocating for herself and her own, you know, not exactly wanting to be a storyline on this show is from what I've gotten from her social media.
Right. And even on her social this week, she was unpacking, like, you know, she was trying to say or was directly saying that Garcelle was body shaming her by talking about her mom's body, which I didn't see from my experience watching the show. But of course, I'm not Amelia watching it. I didn't see that happening in what Garcelle was talking about. I think Garcelle was really referencing an environment where, you know, one's mother is seemingly very focused on a very specific body type. And how does that work when you have two young kids growing up in an environment where mom and dad are both, you know, successful TV performers and a big focus of that is on their personal physical selves? I mean, there's a conversation to say to that. It doesn't mean that Lisa should be blamed. It just means like, let's unpack this environment and try to understand an environment in which her daughter, you know,
if your daughter is struggling with her body image issues, like maybe a reasonable sacrifice to make is to pare down your own social media presence in, you know, glorifying one body type. And that's maybe a possibility. And maybe that's has nothing to do with Amelia's struggle, you know, and maybe that's true. But I think it's a fair discussion to have on the show.
Right. And I think it's a discussion to actually have. The way that Lisa responded was to just say, like, this is horseshit. How dare you? And Lisa Rinna is not the judge and jury of what conversations should exist on the show, or at least if she has been, which it does appear to that to be her role with all things Denise, then she needs to understand that that same pressure can come back on her and how unfortunate and difficult it can be to feel. But at least that conversation is one that I genuinely think Garcelle is having because she's truly interested and wants to unpack it versus what the other women are doing with Denise, which is so much worse than what Kim Richards did to Lisa Rinna in, was it Amsterdam or wherever, where she was like, let's talk about your husband. What you are doing is actively saying, someone told me that you had an affair or some sort of sexual experience. We believe this other person who isn't even on the show, who Lisa Rinna herself hasn't directly discussed this stuff with at that point. You know, let us all pounce on you. And if you don't actually tell us how you feel, we're going to use that for a second round of attack. Like, that's problematic to me.
Yeah. And ultimately, like, I guess I don't it's not an interesting enough story. I believe like a version happened. Mm-hmm. Like I actually believe yes. that maybe they made out. I don't know. I just like don't.
Oh, I think something
I don't,
happened. I think something happened.
I don't believe it's exact. I don't believe it's exactly as Brandy is presenting it, and I don't believe it's exactly as Denise is presenting it either. But it the way that that Kyle and Teddy are making it have presented it feels so as a reaction to what this bizarre like. It almost feels like they're gaslighting us about Denise's experience where they're like, Denise is ashamed of the way that she was on the show in her first season. And so she's trying to course correct now. And I'm like, I guess I don't get that from her. They're sort of like attaching themselves to little things that Denise has done this season and sort of creating this like composite storyline for her. And it doesn't make any sense to me what Kyle and Teddy's sort of idea of Denise is versus what I'm seeing from Denise. And it's like, yeah, maybe she just doesn't want to talk about it on the show. And they all have things that they don't want to talk about on the show. I don't know.
I mean, if you don't have something that you don't want to talk about on the show and you're currently in the cast, you are Teddy Mellencamp, whose literally primary job on LinkedIn is like living in my father's shadow. Like the fact that, like, why else were you brought on if not because you are the child? And that's okay. Like, you should use that. You should use that to further your career. You cannot hide from
well, and it has.
Last name
Let's,
is Mellencamp.
She's gotten a shit ton out of this show. Let's be honest. Nobody would be showing up to that, you know, wellness camp or whatever the fuck she was doing at the beginning of the season if it wasn't for this show. And it's like, okay, Teddy, you've gotten something out of this show. What have we gotten out of it, Teddy? What have we gotten out of your presence on this show? Nothing. Okay? You woke Erica up a little bit a couple seasons ago.
A little bit.
And that's about it. That's all we've gotten from you, Teddy. And it's not worth it. We have not gotten enough from Teddy to make her presence worth it on this show.
I mean, I do appreciate her in uniting our country around a dislike of her.
Yeah, that is.
And I think that is a powerful, in this time when we are so divided, what she has done to bring us all together to say, Teddy, go fuck yourself, mm-hmm. I think is wonderful. We are all hunting this teddy bear. But when I look at her behavior, the harm that she may have done in this conversation by saying, listen, I heard you talk shit about me. Like, that's the worst thing that these women have ever done. That's literally a job requirement. That's what do you think those confessionals are? There aren't just like, tell me something nice about that person you were filming with. It was like, tell me how mad you are and why. So Denise may or may not have talked shit. She said she didn't. Then in confessional, she said she did. I truly don't care. If you're not talking shit about Teddy, you are not alive and well.
Yeah. Check your pulse.
But she says, right, check your pulse. She says, you were talking shit about me to this person, and BT dubs, I'm going to pretend to be enough of a friend of you to you to say what this person was saying about you. But I'm also wrapping it up in a package of, if you don't admit to me that you talk shit, that I'm 100% going to believe that you talk shit, and also that you had an experience with this person who I have now decided I have a super vested interest in believing 100%, who has shown us through many, many press rounds, seasons of the show, whatever else.
Kyle has literally said of Brandy Glanville, all she does is lie. Literal direct quote from Kyle. Like, so it is such a wild thing for Kyle to reverse course now. And the thing is like, it's such an interesting thing, like, at the table, bring up the shit talking. I don't understand why they have such a vested interest in, like, the Denise is fucking Brandy, except as revenge for making them feel bad for talking about a threesome at Denise's house. That's literally it. That's literally it.
And maybe some of the, like, is there a little bit of, like, the last season Kyle Teddy sleepover thing in France where there was that weird conversation? I mean, is that part of it? Is it to like divert attention away from that? Because this is all so stupid to me in the sense that I you know, there's the question of like, should this be on TV? And did you take away and potentially out Denise by talking about this? Because there's a very big difference between jokes about happy endings and saying, you know, this was like very, there's this weird shaming that's like layered underneath this that I myself have felt as someone who's not a part of the LGBTQ community that really makes me uncomfortable with the fact that they are asking her on camera about stuff that she really truly didn't herself bring to the show, aside from like as part of
honestly
sexual experiences. It feels strange.
If Brandy were a cast member, I would be like, mm-hmm. fair game. But like, you're bringing in this like outside like former voice who has like a vested interest in like who clearly like wants to be back on the show, is going to say whatever she needs to get back on the show. It just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't sit right with me. It doesn't sit right. And I'm mad that we're even spending, like, I'm mad that, like, that's the only thing really to talk about on this show.
And they were having such a great, I still think, genuinely, this has been a really fascinating season. I will 100% watch this again. I wouldn't say that about last season, for example, yeah. or at least the second half. It was... Last season, the LVP versus everybody else just got exhausting because once she was gone, there was literally nothing there.
Except for Camille.
At least this season, because Dorit has come into her own and has shown her like power on the show and is playing such an MVP role, and because we have Sutton there, who's a friend of, except she's 100% a full-time housewife.
I'll say this. I don't like Sutton, but I appreciate, especially at the beginning of the season, that Sutton was sort of just throwing everything at the wall to see what stick. You know, like she was starting shit mm-hmm. with Dorit. She was starting shit with like Garcelle earlier in the trip. Like she's really there to sort of like, she's like, I don't know what my storyline is, but I will have a storyline. And I appreciate that about her, even as I dislike her as a human being.
Do you dislike her? I think she's great for the show.
I think she's great for the show. I just like don't. Like her. I sort of even like weirdly I hate that like she's making me stand up for Dorit's Buca di Beppo. Like I it's like crazy. I think Sutton is proof positive that wealth does not give you taste. I think everything she wears is hideous. I think
it does not fit her well. It does not
no
fit her well.
And I think like the way she wears her wealth is, I don't know, it's a turnoff for me, but again, good for the show. But
I think she should 100% be full time next season.
Well, she was supposed to be.
Show her kids. Yeah, but her ex-husband fucked it up. But really, not really, because she's still in every goddamn scene. Yeah. Like, she's still in more of the show than Garcelle, who is rightly so full time. So why they decided to demote her because they couldn't show stuff of her kids? It's like she's still contributing a lot, and she's actually incredibly valuable as someone who can, in her confessionals and during scenes, counter Kyle and Rinna and Teddy in a way that actually helps push along the plot and doesn't feel like a pile on. I think there's a lot of value that she brings. I also have to tell you, I had never heard of Buca di Beppo until several years ago. We were doing, during recording Andy's Girls, we did weekly drink, a housewife drink and get drunk and like scream at each other while recording. And my co-host had to go to Buca di Beppo because it was the only place in the city that sold Lisa Vanderpump sangria,
wow.
which was toxic. I'm not going to say it started Corona, but I'm also not saying that. And it was, and now I understand why it was sold there, because she was friends with the owner, who Dorit happens to also be friends with, which is why this strange little plastic lemon situation is happening, which I cannot wait to see yeah. one day in 2027. What am I even? But all this to say, I think that Sutton adds value to the show and she helps the show. And my hope is that on the reunion, she and Dorit.
But she's not there.
Help.
I don't think she shows. I think she said that she wasn't going to the reunion, right? Or she wasn't at
the
reunion.
She didn't even cameo?
I don't think she. I think she said to. She responded on Twitter to somebody who asked that she wasn't at the reunion.
Sutton?
Yeah. I could be completely making that up. And
if she's not at the reunion, that is actually insane.
Or I could be mixing her up with Elise, but.
Camille? Oh, yeah, Elise isn't. But what? I mean who, sweetie, yeah. It's like, why would
Don't
you
eat
be
it.
There? You're not even, it's adorable yeah. that you're that you think you're a part of this. I think good for you. You can't even get a certificate of attendance because I don't know when you're present. But yeah, BH for me has been kind of a wild journey. It's interesting to hear you say that you haven't had that experience as a whole watching this season. So where do you think all of this stuff will land? I mean, next week, Brandy shows up to the shower to continue to bury Denise Moore, which is so odd for someone who's actually not even a friend of.
It's just like a she said at this point, and right. It's going to continue down this path. Like I watched a little bit of Teddy and Kyle on Watch What Happens. It seems like this is the way the season ends, which is them saying, I believe Brandy, and Denise denying it. And that's it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of places for this to go. And that's what I think I find a little frustrating and concerning about it, ultimately.
And as you said a little while ago, it doesn't help matters that Denise isn't playing the game. It doesn't help matters that Denise says, you know, it's just a flat denial or exits scene. It does not help her case. It doesn't help plot. It's something that Brian Moylan, friend of the show, referenced on his recap this week for Vulture. You know, she's not playing the game, which is almost destroying the game. Like, she's revealing too much about how plot is orchestrated. And it is potentially in disservice to the franchise long term, but short term, you know, it's tough to see. It's tough to see these women. It's tough to see Rinna say, I'm trying to be a friend to you, which is why I'm attacking you in group settings.
I mean, and that fake ass, more crocodile tears from Rinna. I can't stand to see just the fakeness. It is so gross to me to see her sort of crocodile tear. And then the church, I need to go to church, and like turning herself into a victim in that moment is just so, ugh. It's so transparent, and it's so frustrating to see again. I want to see more. I need to see new stuff on the show, and sometimes it feels like we're retreading beats, and it's frustrating.
And I also feel like this next season has to be the downfall of Rinna. She's so great on this show. I'm more than happy to dislike what she's doing right now, but there needs to be a counter, and maybe that counter is Garcelle. I hope there is someone else on Garcelle's side, and I don't know if Denise is going to be back. Regardless of how big her contract was, I honestly, truly do not know if she will be back on the show. Do you think she's coming back?
I think she will, actually. I think they're going to boot Teddy. I think they're going to bring in someone else from Denise's circle, and it'll be Garcelle, Denise, and new cast member Kyle and Rinna and everybody else.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see Kyle
and Dorit in the middle of that lineup as she deserves to be now.
Oh, just kidding.
And if you would have told me 3-4 years ago that I would be standing Dorit as I am now, I would have I would have slapped you across the face because I would never have believed it. But I am a full-time Dorit stan.
And after Pantygate, to see how full circle we've come, where she's discussing it. She's looping it in when she talks to PK of like, we've been through this. I have seen what has happened when you've gotten involved in stuff, and we have learned lessons. Let's help this new person and her husband who don't seem to really understand how the game is played, and at least give them the opportunity to be better informed to help them better perform. Yeah. I mean, the woman is sort of a little bit of a saint. Dorit. If Camille at one point was Saint Camille, I feel like the sainthood has passed and has gone to someone who's potentially more deserving. I do have to say there's a segment on Andy's Girls called Satchels of Gold in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Killoran Ben Simone on Scary Island. And they are listener thoughts, questions, and feels about the episodes as they are being watched. So I have a satchel of gold about Garcelle from Brandon in New Jersey, who says, I'm so glad Denise finally stood up for herself during that last dinner. She was absolutely right when she said that they were being mean girls and that she didn't deserve any of this. What really struck me, and I didn't expect, is when Garcelle went outside to cry. It was such a true human moment, truly a person that seemed emotionally exhausted and over the whole trip. I'm totally team Denise, and she didn't deserve to get destroyed by the group, but seeing Garcelle cry made me realize that it must have been an emotionally rough 3 days of filming for her too, as she got to see the harshest and worst part of this show play out right before her eyes. It was also interesting seeing how someone like Dorit acts in a situation like this, telling Denise and everyone who's getting a rough go versus Garcelle, who's new to the show and is watching her friend get piled on.
See, I love this, but I also don't think it's that deep with regard to Garcelle. I think Garcelle, I think it's more of a Kim Fields situation where Garcelle is regretting doing the show. It is not like an emotional thing. I think she's just like, what the fuck have I done to my life? I'm a legitimate, like, successful person.
Yes.
And I'm here in Italy and I'm jet lagged and I'm tired of these women. And I think, like, it is ultimately that, like, when she said I miss my kids, I was like, oh, this is approaching Kim Fields territory. And that was concerning to me. But I just think that, like, I think Garcelle is above this show. And it's really tough for me. I rarely say that about any of the women that grace my screen on a Housewives show. But I do truly, in my heart of hearts, believe that Garcelle is too good for this show. And I think she knows it. And I think she's frustrated to be there.
But I'm so appreciative.
I know. I'm so glad that she is. I know.
That we love so much. I can't tell her. I think she said in an interview she's not received this many, like, mazel tov congrats from people that she knows in the industry for Housewives than anything else. She's like, it exploded. The level of support and of people reaching out was unbelievable. And I do think that she can come out of this when she ultimately leaves, and I don't think it will tarnish her in any way. I think she will have even bigger and better name recognition with viewers who may not have been as aware of her illustrious career as so many of us have been and were. So I'm hopeful that little crying moment was her tapping out for just a second, then coming straight back in and delighting us even more and holding people responsible. And I think she's going to really be great, or at least attempt to be, versus Rinna on the reunion. And I'm excited to see her, you know, star shine even brighter in BH. I can't wait to see it. I mean, one star burns brighter as another slowly crawls to a little bit of a halt, which is what I think about when I think of New York, which is having a tough time.
Yeah, it's dark. It's dark. And it is tough. And I'm upset that we spent so much time talking about Beverly Hills, because now we only have, you know, so much time to unpack the darkness of New York, which is...
Tell me. Get straight to the... Just get straight.
Well, I will say, I don't necessarily miss Tinsley, but I miss... It does feel like we need a sixth person on this trip. Mm-hmm. It does feel, and it's not necessarily Elise either, but it does feel like we're missing a cast member, and we need, like, just one more element. And maybe it would be Tinsley. I think Tinsley would have been great on this trip, but it is tough. It feels like, I don't know, Leah continues to have, I think, one of the best debut seasons of any housewife.
Yes, completely, 100%.
And I think that's in part because of the context of, like, of who she's replacing and when the cast members that are still there, and Tinsley's having sort of a mid-season send-off. Like, I think it is all the perfect storm to make Leah, in particular, like, such a captivating first, you know, give her a captivating first season like she's having. And I think, like, she is the perfect combo of, like, voice of reason. Like, she's giving us a little bit of that voice of reason, but she's also chaos, and that is so important on the show. She's messier than Bethany really, like, would get at the, you know, later seasons, and, like, she's not always right, but she thinks she is, and that's important. But it is tough. I mean, I used to be Dorinda ride or die. I would go to bat for Dorinda.
She was great casting.
No matter what she did, I am a Dorinda myself. I identify as a Dorinda.
Wow.
I throw a great party. I get very emotional. But this Dorinda is, I mean, that end, the last 10 minutes of this episode was tough to watch. And the tone of, like, she wasn't even drunk this time. And that's telling in a really disturbing way of, like, the way she gaslights, and the ultimate problem is that Leah has not stepped up to be the voice of reason with Dorinda yet, because she's too afraid of Dorinda.
The problem is
that everyone else is too afraid except Ramona, and Ramona, while she's right about Dorinda, the presentation, the fake crying, the is not the best way to get, because she's giving Dorinda a reason to ignore her, which is all of the histrionics that she's bringing to the table, is, like, not the way to get across to Dorinda. And so it's just so frustrating to watch that of the one person who's actually speaking truth about Dorinda's behavior is Ramona, who is vile and so awful. And so, of course, Dorinda, if I were in Dorinda's place, I'd be like, this is the person that's coming for me. This is the person that's trying to bring me back down to earth. I don't think so. And so it's very frustrating to watch and sad to watch as someone who loved Dorinda.
I mean, it shows a part of Dorinda that we've seen in seasons past when she went to that party with Candace Bushnell and was like, I'm going to eat Sonia alive and I'm not going to be drunk so it can be used against me. I'm going to be stone cold sober so that when I experience and showcase my anger, which is present regardless of how much I've had to drink, you guys can see that I actually mean it. And that's the thing. She harnesses her anger for bad.
You forget. And it's chilling. It's chilling to watch her turn to Luann and say, oh, it's so great what Hannah's doing with that library. What the fuck was Hannah doing with the library? Like, and why was it so important? It was, and it made it all the worse because Hannah is like one of the least likable housewife's children on any franchise.
Really?
I find
Avery is okay.
Avery is up there for sure, but I find Hannah so like every time she's on my screen, I'm like, ugh. Ugh, get her off.
Wow,
I just,
no disrespect. I've never felt anything about her.
Yeah, I
no
really
disrespect.
There's something about her that she is that rich girl I knew who grew up in New York, and it is like
tough for me to
stomach. But yeah, it was so hard. The tone of voice that Dorinda had in that last section was just so rough. And it's like so sad because like I love like shitting Dorinda. I love, mm-hmm. you know, like I love diarrhea Dorinda. Like that's sort of like where I need her to be is struggling with
in
her
bed.
Stomach. But it is so rough. If someone yelled at me for answering emails at breakfast on a vacation, I would lose my shit. I would lose it.
When you join their table.
Yeah.
When you sat down at their workspace and then chided them for doing the thing that you saw they were doing before you approach. Then you do the exact same behavior. And when they even try to say, do you see the irony here? You try to eat them alive. Like Dorinda cannot understand or refuses to accept the idea of accountability, let alone being accountable. And the ferocious way in which she hears it, and all she hears is like, you're trying to fuck with me and I'm defending my territory no matter what I do. Like it was all worth it as long as I can tell you that I'm not owning up to a single goddamn thing, is a very strange track to take. And Leah is great. She's having a remarkable first season. I agree with you, one of the best seasons ever, but it shows in moments like this week, and especially in those last 10 minutes, what would have changed had Bethany not quit 45 seconds before the filming started? Because the pressure on us as viewers wouldn't be on Leah, who has stepped in to be like the voice of reason in many ways. Not every way, but many ways. Bethany would have held her accountable and Dorinda would have had no choice but to listen.
Exactly. And I don't know that we're going to get that from Leah this season. I think that eventually Leah will stand up to Dorinda and it will be dark. It will be so explosive on Dorinda's part, because I think Dorinda really is like leaning on Leah in a big way. You can tell that she really likes Leah. She really wants to feel like a mother to Leah. And when she is betrayed by Leah eventually, by Leah simply just calling her out on her awful behavior, it will be a sight to behold. And I don't know that it's going to happen this season. I sense a real reticence from Leah to go there with Dorinda. I wonder how much it will come up at the reunion. Having Dorinda seeing some of the stuff that because Leah has, you know, admitted in her confessionals that she's afraid of Dorinda, that like this behavior is outrageous. And I wonder how much of it will come out in the reunion.
I don't think it will, because Leah and Dorinda both need each other to bury Ramona. And this is not the moment where it's going to happen. I think it could happen next season, but I also think
it's a triangulation.
Some sort of
shakeup.
Right, exactly. And some sort of shakeup is on the horizon. They're looking at entirely new people. It's a direction they need to go in. They need to fill the generational gap that currently exists, where it's not like Leah and people who feel like a motherly. There needs to be somewhere else in there where it feels like someone who had the kind of relationship with Leah that Leah had with Tinsley, like, exists for someone who still lives. Like,
I say, and I'm not the only, and I know I'm not the only person calling for this, but bring on Leah's, like, little shit-stirring sister. Like, honestly, give us a Kyle and Kim sort of, like, allegory on New York. I think it's great. Like, any sister who's willing to say mom doesn't like you has earned a spot, at least as a, you know, has earned a spot on the show, I'd say.
I mean, I saw her sister at the filming that I went to in December, which, if it's shown in any way, will be, like, probably in, like, 2 or 3 weeks. And I don't know if it will, but it was Leah, her sister, Elise, who we were all like, who the fuck is this person? And Sonia attending Luann's dress rehearsal for her new cabaret tour. And you know, Leah and Leah number two, Leah Jr., were both there. So I think they tried to use her as much as they could toward the tail end. And I don't know enough about her to want her to be full time. But let's see. Let's see what happens. Let's see what she brings that night. I mean, you know, I guess we'll just kind of like have to wait and see. But I do have to ask you just very briefly, Potomac. Things are happening.
I love it.
Whose side? I think every week I need to ask, as we build toward this altercation, in quotes, that's happening in the next 7 or 6 weeks of episodes, whose side are you presently on, Monique or Candace?
Well, it's tough because Potomac is one of the rare franchises where I'm sort of on, I'm rooting for everybody in a big way. Like, and I'm just gonna come out and say it. And I'm a bit of a troll. In my heart.
Don't tell me. But Don't do it.
I'm Team Candace. I am. I am a little bit Team Candace. I find her captivating. I find that any woman who's willing to call another woman who is in labor a roach is iconic to me. Iconic. I mean,
top tier trolling as a person. That's top tier
trolling.
That's top tier.
And so I find her presence to be really, really important for this show. And so it's hard for me to separate like those two things. Like, what do I find her behavior objectionable and sort of vile on its face? Yes,
of course.
But do I find it to be important to this show? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do I think she's one of the most gorgeous housewives that has ever graced our screens? I think yes. Also, yes. And I think the same of Monique, too, honestly. I mean, this entire cast is
gorgeous.
Giselle, every single one of them. I mean, Giselle is one of those people that, like, if you... sort of on a graph, if we're doing a graph of sort of like most naturally beautiful to taste, it's like she's really high up on most naturally beautiful. And just like some of the outfits she wears are atrocious.
Horrific.
Her house
is a cry for help.
Oh my God. How could a woman that gorgeous have so little taste? It is astonishing.
Nobody's perfect. She's the perfect example.
What she wore to Ashley's night out was crazy. That like rainbow top and the shorts, it was so unbelievable to me. But I mean, there's not a whole lot there yet with Potomac. I'm excited. I love them all. I'm a little uncertain. I find Dr. Wendy to be a little sweaty so far. In a way that seems out of place. Yeah, I'm not sure that I'm there for Dr. Wendy yet. I think that she might bring something later on in the season, but I think that we're leaning a little bit too... I think it's important for Candace to have someone in her corner because of everything she does is so, you know, indefensible. And so having someone in her corner is going to be important. But I find, like, you know... I'm a professor and class is always in session. To say that at a lunch and not as your tagline, like it's like we don't want to hear them speak the taglines in normal conversation. And that's what I'm sort of getting from her. Like, I think she's a little bit too like aware that she's on a show right now. And I don't know that I believe it yet, but I'm willing to wait. It's early. We'll see.
Did you get a chance to see the live that I think you would have only been able to experience actually live, because Monique said at the end she was absolutely not saving this, between Monique and Karen? It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my entire life.
And that's a matchup that I'm interested in on its face. But no, I didn't see that.
a dream scenario. Karen had been turtle timing earlier that day. Ray was on. Ray kept trying to get Karen to like literally turn off her phone. And Karen was like, one more thing, one sec. And she was tipsy and wonderful. They were both coming very, very hard for Giselle. And
wow.
And following Andy's baby shower in LA, the ladies who attended went to a dinner. And allegedly during that dinner, Giselle was telling the women that a storyline she wanted to introduce and run with was the idea that Candace's third son was not Chris's. And some fallout happened there. Karen told Monique what happened. Candace did not. And Candace and Monique were friends at that point, which I think influences a lot of the anger that Monique now feels toward Candace. But they're talking about it pretty openly in a way that I don't know if the like Giselle ownership of it comes up during the season, but it's apparent that the women have no issue addressing it, doing like quote unquote press, which I would include Instagram, you know, yeah. Like doing social media and everything else. And it sets up a really fascinating track because we're all thinking about this altercation with a lot of stuff brimming to the surface that, you know, pops up and explodes. But I wonder where things are going to land with Giselle, because Karen is like very loudly saying that people are focusing on the Candace of it all, but there is a larger problem here. And it stems with what, you know, Giselle was planning to do, which was like fully and truly using as plot the idea that this like child, like toddler, like little person, like teeny tiny little kiddo was not, you know, a baby born from the mom and dad he thought, which is
Monique.
Yeah, he bat that Giselle, Karen is saying that Giselle is the person that was, what did I just say? Monique, and that it's Monique and Chris.
Yeah, you had said Candace's, and I was like,
my bad.
So confused.
No. Sorry. Do not want to ever run into this unnecessarily when I don't need to. Sorry. So that it's, and that's something that I think Monique has held on to as well. Like, obviously, she and Candace can't stand each other, but there is this other major problem here, which is that if this rumor did start with Giselle, is Giselle actually going to get owned for it?
Yeah.
That was like big news number one. Big news number two was Candace attempting to say that if Giselle is back, she's leaving the show, when it's like, sweetie, Candace is great in short doses, but she is also a truly toxic person. And it, my guess would be that after this season, I don't know that Monique will return, but entirely of her own volition. I think if Monique leaves, she will be in the absolute minority of housewives who do in fact leave and don't return and aren't, you know, like not returning right. Because their contracts weren't renewed. But Candace, I assume, is not back, because I think that this season will become so toxic. It's going to be an exceptional season, but it will become so toxic and she will have so few allies, and the people that she's not aligned with will truly refuse to engage with her, that they'll have no choice but to let her go. I think she brings something that's really great in short doses, but she's not meant for this franchise or this world long term. So I guess we'll have to kind of watch what happens and see. I mean, Joel Kimbister, there's so much we talked about. There's so much left unsaid.
I know.
You need to come back. I'm obsessed
anytime.
With you. I would love it. Can you tell the folks what you're working on, how to follow you, how to stay in touch, how to galvanize Kenya Moore to follow you once?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Twitter?
Start a campaign.
Please.
Hashtag
GoFundMe
whatever.
Was made for this.
Yeah. You can follow me on all social media platforms at I Hate Joel Kim. You can listen to Urgent Care, my podcast, which is out every week. And that's really basically all I'm working on during the quarter. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Guys, fun, exciting news. I launched a contest giveaway on Instagram for a plate that is for the contest. It is my plate, you fucking bitch. It is a remarkable, I have one. It is a remarkable rendering of Sonia Tremont Morgan of the Upstate Tremonts holding a remote control like a scepter, adorned in her Elizabethan oil painting best. It is a piece of art, a plate you hang on your wall and you look at and brings you so much joy. And it's totes free, guys. So join that giveaway on Instagram at Dame Galley. We're going to announce the winner in a couple weeks. And thanks to Shop So Messy for donating to that, to one special AG. And guys, there are going to be some fun bonus episodes up on Patreon this week. Support Andy's Girls, patreon.com/Andy's Girls. And, you know, just stay in touch. Let us know your thoughts and feels. I have a fun supersized satchel specific bonus ep coming up shortly, so I hope you guys enjoy it. And I just enjoyed this so much. You are like,
thank you for having me. You're a delight,
this was
a scholar,
complete joy. Oh my god, thank you. It was such a pleasure having you on the people's couch. So here's to next time. Guys, let us know your thoughts and feels. Whose side are you on, Monique versus Monique? You have only one choice, and I just wanted to make sure that was clear. And we will talk to you guys again soon. Bye bye.